Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And for, I think, the third straight weekend, we enter the biggest weekend of the season. Lakers have a huge game tonight against the Oklahoma City Thunder, one of four teams, including the Lakers, who have a 36-37 record right now in the Wild West. And then on Sunday against the Bulls for the first time this season in part of a home and home, we'll be playing them in the first game of our road trip as well. And so before we get too deep into the OKC game, guys, we'll start with you, Darius. Like, just kind of where you at with this Lakers team right now? It's been a pretty crazy year, and even this stretch past the deadline has had its twists and turns. So going into this weekend, where are you at?
I think I oscillate between a certain amount of optimism and frustration, which are two things that I think are very much connected when I think about fandom in general, right? The less optimism or the less I think you can do, the less I get frustrated by the fact that you're not doing the thing. The last game that the Lakers played, where Austin Reeves started and this team took even more shape, whether it was a big step or not, they took another step forward, I think, in terms of establishing their identity. And it's an identity that I think can work with or without LeBron. And carrying that identity forward gives me a certain amount of optimism, because it's like, hey, this looks like it can work against almost anyone. When I bring the frustration part back in, it's how are they in this situation to begin with, which I think we all understand how they are there. And then the stakes that now exist on every single game that in the moment heighten how much all of this matters, how much each possession matters, how much when Phoenix was climbing back into the game and I'm looking at their roster and I'm just like, how is this game this close? Oh, it's because Devin Booker is super good. And now I'm worried about how Devin Booker might play down the stretch. And it's also like angsty. And so, Mike, for me, it's that combination of like, oh man, I think they're so close to like breaking through and getting the 500 and then climbing above 500 and then going on the run that I think that they can go on. But we all carry battle scars with us, Mike, both the players and I think as fans, and fans especially wear those on their sleeves so much more. And that's sort of where I'm at. It's not even the same team, but it's been years of this that have been accumulating of like, oh, they're almost there. They're almost there. Like, oh, they've been struck down again, either by their own doing or the basketball gods or the injury gods or whoever. So I carry that with me. I'm hoping that this is the weekend that it actually happens. And there's a certain amount of optimism around that. But you can never feel too optimistic, I feel like, or else you can get burned by that.
Yeah, well, things change perspective-wise at the trade deadline and, you know, really before LeBron's injury in Dallas. But with the prospect of him coming back, I think that still allows for a certain level of optimism. And it's the basic way that I think about it is that they have enough to win the games that they need to win right now in order to put themselves in the spot. The frustration element, I think, that you just referred to, Darius, comes from the fact that they're not always taking care of business, even though they can and they have enough. Yeah. And that's that tug of war there between those two perspectives. So thanks, Ray. I'm looking at, I had to make these tiers for the studio show last night at Spectrum. And one of the producers was like, hey, just put together some, group these teams in the Western Conference in any way that you want to. And the way that I ended up thinking about it was like, I'm trying to think about how to do this without giving you the whole thing. So I'll just do the one I put the Lakers in. And it was ring or sting. And it's the Suns, the Warriors, the Grizzlies, and the Lakers. I didn't actually put the Nuggets in there. I have them in the not the 85 Bears section along with the Kings. Basically, like, I need to see the defense. We can actually get through a couple of rounds. As great as they've been. Actually, they haven't been great. Good as they've been in the regular season. This is where we can talk about their point differential being worse than most number one seeds, right? But like the Lakers are in that group of teams for me that, like, if everything goes well and if they actually do get full LeBron back, and then that slots all these guys down, and look at how much better Austin Reeves is going to be than most teams' fourth best player, if that's the case. Or you could make the argument that he's three, and then look how much better D'Angelo Russell could be in that fourth spot. So like there really is an idea of this team, especially considering what the rest of the West is, where like you could start to have some big dreams, but they could also not even get in to the better play-in spot, and they could lose in the first in the play-in round. And the variance there is the same for me with the Warriors. It's the same with the Suns based on KD. It's the same with the Grizzlies. If the Grizzlies, they're not going to get Steven Adams back, I don't think. They're not going to get Brandon Clark back. We know that for a fact. So are they vulnerable if they were to get the Lakers or even the Warriors in round one? Yes. But could they also win the West if things break the other way? So that's just there's this big variance. And yet it's a much better spot to be in when we looked at the roster going into the season thinking, well, they're going to have to make a trade at some point, or this team's just not going to be, you know, functional enough to get things done. So that's where it is for me, Pete. Like they're there, but they haven't shown consistently enough that they can do it. And whether or not they do is we'll see. And a lot of that will happen tonight. Like if they don't beat OKC tonight, which they should, then that changes the combo again.
And actually doing it is such an unusual ask. Like I won't speak for anyone else, but I've been frustrated at times for like a lack of concentration and focus, and that's been a topic and all that. But just from a practical standpoint, not only did we make more moves at the trade deadline than we ever have in team history, that like you're incorporating styles of player that are the opposite of what you had before, right? Like the whole nature of the team is different. And we just have this, this in the last 3 years worth of like LeBron's in and then AD goes out, AD comes back, LeBron is out. And that Pelicans game, remember you guys were laughing at me for watching it six times. That was the one game that they all played together. Right. And I might watch it a seventh time today because it was so, so much fun. And so there's a certain amount, like, in a weird way, I think it can be advantageous in a playoff scenario in that I have no idea how the hell you'd scout our team in the first place. Like, what do we do? What do we like to run? What are the lineups that we like? We don't even know, you know? And so there's a certain degree of randomness that I like. That's where I think the skill level of the team that I want to turn it to a more positive direction, D, is I think that both the skill level and the ability to read a game in a read and react type of sense, and even Vanderbilt does this. Every guy in the new starting lineup, LeBron, AD, D'Lo, Austin, and Vanderbilt all speak the same language of basketball, of knowing how to read and react to situations very well. And that can be a cut and a screen, just as it can be flaring to the corner for an open three. And that is the one thing that I hang on to, along with just a collective talent level that's like, oh, these guys are good. McMenamin did a thing on AD today where he was like, AD was like, God, I can't wait for a training camp together. And that echoes a thing that D'Lo told Mike on a walk-off, is there's this idea of like, oh, if we only had more time together, but we don't. And so the talent level I believe in, but being able to do something substantive with this little continuity would be unprecedented, but I'm certainly fascinated to see how it ends.
Yeah, the point that you made about speaking the same basketball language, earlier this year I wrote a piece called, and the idea was on conjuring continuity. right? And this is something that the Lakers have had to try to do year after year after year, is find continuity when you don't have it naturally, right? And that's often hard. But one of the things I pointed to, and in some ways it's impossible, like you're starting from, mm-hmm. from a deficit in ways where Mike has outlined, done a really good job of outlining this over the course of the last few seasons, where other teams just have this baked in from year after year after year, even of,
yep.
of a togetherness with a core two or three or even four players. And
the coach too, right? Monty Williams, yes. Ty Lue, Steve Kerr.
Exactly, exactly. And so one of the things that I mentioned in that piece is basketball IQ and smarts and general feel for the game that can mask a lack of previous playing experience together, right? Because mm-hmm. you do it's like speaking one of the Latin-based languages. Right. Like you may be Spanish and it's not the same as Italian, but if you go to Italy, you might pick some of it up. Right. Like you might understand some of mm-hmm. what the locals are talking about. Right. And so there's always going to be some nuance there that is lost. And that's where I worry about some of what the Lakers might deal with, even when LeBron comes back. But so many of these guys understanding how to play and their games being fits together, Mike, that is an important bridge that previous iterations of this Lakers roster couldn't really say was true for them.
That just had me thinking that a lot about sports is creating an advantage over your opponent and mm-hmm. really life, you know, just in order to achieve success, like how are you going to beat that which is in front of you? And continuity is one. IQ is one, athleticism is one. So if you have a team that has no continuity, but they're just ridiculously more athletic than the other team, that team can have a certain level of success. If the mm-hmm. team is just that much smarter, this is like the old men show up in the young kids game at the park, right? And one team looks like they should win. And then it's just backdoor cuts and, you know, zone defenses and traps and all that kind of stuff. And the other team's like, what just happened? So they're in the NBA, especially once rosters get evened out and like once the trade deadline happens, you're not likely going to have that much of an athletic advantage, at least that another team can't counter with somebody on their bench. But maybe the IQ part, maybe that is the thing that can fast track some of that continuity a little bit. So I just wanted to Darius, to put it back to you, like it doesn't have to be the IQ part, and it could be some other type of advantage, but that is the one that could make up the ground. And that's what the Lakers are going to have to do.
And if I could just throw one thing in here, I spend a lot of games like going like, oh, we do so many dumb things where like, I just want to throw that into the mix because that's also true about the team is their ability to read the game, but also a certain like, what are you doing that is unusual for a team?
I think that that's true. I also think that when it's like how the smartest kid in class can sometimes be the kid who colors outside the lines a bunch. And you're just like, well, what are you doing? And it's just like, well, I'm creative, bro. Don't try to tamp that down. Right.
He might not be listening to the teacher. Either.
I walk a different path. Right. And we're going to get there. And so in bridging both of those ideas between the team that makes mistakes and the team that has a certain feel for the game, there is a seriousness of the moment and a seriousness of the game that there are times where this specific group hasn't always been there. This is where I think they've missed LeBron.
Doesn't LeBron kind of take care of a lot of that?
He brings it, whether or not he takes care of it, is a different thing to me, Mike, than him bringing it in a certain to a certain level where players will either follow him or not, right? And so, look, how many years was KCP on the team and he played with LeBron? And I'm just like, this dude don't get it. He don't get it. Like he's still rushing one man fast breaks. He's still like playing in a style where there's just a looseness and a recklessness where I'm just like, no, bro, like this ain't it. This ain't the style. And then the championship season, Avery Bradley is still starting. Remember, Bradley started all the way up until the bubble, and then he didn't go to the bubble. And KCP, though, was already starting to show a certain form. And by the time the bubble came, he was playing with a seriousness as well, where if you would have asked me if first year with the Lakers, KCP was going to play like that, I would have told you there's no way that that's going to happen. So it takes some time. Fast tracking that, Mike, is whether or not do some of the players who don't have that naturally, can they tap into it in a way where they are focused for a longer stretch than what they've shown that they're capable of? I think LeBron can be a bridge towards that, but you can lead a horse to water, right? It's sort of that entire thing.
I mean it in a more basic sense of just him being on the floor for like 34 minutes and then, you know, and then Reeves and Russell and AD and like some of the other guys and just the raw total minutes of another guy, and LeBron then ups some of that. And of course, he'll make a couple of mistakes himself too, but he will just up that collective connectivity and IQ, because in the moments, especially in tight situations when guys aren't quite sure what to do, that you can just give LeBron the ball there. And he most likely will put you in a better spot. And when he's off the floor, then you can have more of the, it just all cascades down. Like that's for me, they've got enough guys where I think that some of the mistake type things that in lack of focus and those things, I just get sort of taken care of because of the presence. That's all.
I think you're spot on with that. And I think both of you are spot on with that. Both Darius in terms of like the personality of the team, but also the practical, like if you add a LeBron to this group, AD's a good one offensively. He's a dominant two. He's a great guy to have as your second guy on offense. Same thing from D'Lo going from two to three, right? It just kind of changes the nature of the team to a degree where you've got enough guys now at different levels that it just causes a lot of problems for the defense. But we don't have that tonight, and got a good team. We're playing in OKC. Let's take a break, come back, dive into the game.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So that idea of meeting the seriousness of the moment, D, that's something that I've admired from watching OKC this year. They're a team that is going to play at a certain level of attentiveness. I think that when they have that plus a legit number one guy in Shea, who's a really good player, I think that every time I've watched them this year, they're also one of those teams, I think, in the spirit of what Mike talks about a lot, I think a lot of teams, when they see OKC on their schedule throughout a year until they've proved it a bit more this year, it's one of those ones where maybe they're not as up for that as they are for the bigger teams on the schedule. And OKC always takes advantage of that. Whenever there's a team BS it, like they're going to crash from the weak side corner, they're going to box out, they're going to run the floor. We saw this the last game before the trade deadline on the night that LeBron broke the record. We played a fairly unserious game and they burned us for it. And so talk to me. This is the third time. Yeah, this is the third time we're facing OKC. Talk to me about what you see in them in a critical game.
So I watched a good amount of their game against the Clippers on Thursday night, where the Clippers blew them out, right? Clippers got hot, shot the ball really well, played with some physicality and some force in a key stretch of the game. Kawhi was sort of unreal in terms of like very Terminator-esque with his shot making and getting to spots. It did not matter a lot of times who was defending him. And if he felt too much pressure, he just gave the ball up and then worked towards something else. And so the Clippers won. But that seriousness and that focus that you talked about, Pete, that was there for a good 25, 28 minutes of the game, like to start the game. And then it wasn't until the Clippers started to really put the screws to them in like the latter part of the third quarter and then into the fourth where they broke the game open. And so when I watched that game, it was super interesting watching sort of two versions of the same team look like stare at each other, right? Mm-hmm. Where I saw Shea trying to get to a lot of the same spots that Kawhi got to with the same sort of deliberate nature and the same sort of finishing ability. And I saw some ball pressure wings and some perimeter players. And I saw a lot of that going back and forth. And then the Clippers shooting was the thing that put them over the top, where OKC did not have that same caliber of shooting. And the thing that I thought was, Mike, boy, how would OKC look if they had, or what does this matchup look like if the Clippers had a little bit less shooting and a little bit less perimeter force, but they had Anthony Davis instead of like Ivica Zubac and one of the Plumlee brothers. And I really zeroed in on AD as being the difference maker in this sort of game. Like I worry a little bit about OKC saying, you know what, Lu Dort and Jalen Williams, the perimeter Jalen Williams, like go, you've got D'Lo and Austin, right? And we're putting big, strong, athletic dudes on your sort of more finesse style perimeter players. Where then does the advantage lie for you? Right? Asking the Lakers a question, right? Put them in position where you make them answer questions. Well, AD is the guy who can answer all of those questions. And he sort of comes off the top rope as it's like, oh, well, do you have an answer for this? I'm Anthony Davis. And it made me think about his third quarter in the last game, where it's just like, oh yeah, that's the dude. The third quarter from the Suns game. And so where are you at, Mike, in terms of viewing the OKC matchup? I'm sure you were watching with great interest their game against the Clippers and your general feel about OKC as a team and a threat and that idea that Anthony Davis is lurking as a possible solution.
Yeah, the Thunder, I first want to make clear, because it's going to sound like I'm criticizing them and ripping them in a second, but I want to make clear that they have been terrific based on what their youth is, based on what their expectation was, based on what their roster is, like not having Chet Holmgren, not having a lot of vets, all of that. Like they are a team to be commended. That if I were one of those fans in that building and I got maxed or close to it type of effort from a bunch of young guys and like focused defensive attention, great. You know, that like no complaints. But Pete alluded to this in something that I think about a lot and just kind of like watching Lee pass. And I was it just was crystallized for me when I covered the Timberwolves. You know, they have very much taken advantage of teams that do not approach their game against them with the same type of focus that they do against other teams. They just have. Like, look at their last 10 games. We talked about they won 8 of 10. Well, the first two were against Utah. Both of them were at home. Utah not particularly trying to win those games as a franchise. Certainly some of the players were, and not the most focused teams with just all types of different guys in and out, rotation all over the place. The next one was against Golden State. I watched that full game. Golden State could not have cared less about being in the building that night. OKC beat them. They scored 137 points on Golden State, the champs from last year. Okay. Then they got smacked at Phoenix. Phoenix did approach that game with seriousness. They lost 132 to 101. Then they go to New Orleans, not a particularly serious New Orleans team, not playing with a ton of focus, and they win that game easily. Then they play the Spurs. We all know what the Spurs are doing right now. The next home win is against Brooklyn. This is, of course, after the trade. Brooklyn had some other guys out. They go to Toronto, a Toronto team that was ready, that needed to win that game, that's kind of making their own push. Toronto beats them 128 to 111. Game is over, you know, relatively quickly. Then they go back home, narrowly beat Phoenix, basically because Shea had 40, and like none of these teams were overly trapping and over like doing what Frank Vogel would do, you know, in a playoff series to Gilgeous Alexander without them having many other alternatives. Then we both saw the three of us watched, I'm sure, most of the last two games against the Clippers. Clippers, not a super serious effort on Tuesday, a very serious effort on Thursday when Kawhi Leonard, I don't think, loved the whole Lou Dort, you know, holding him on that last possession and the way that worked out. He was super serious and they smashed him. It took a little while, but eventually it's 127-105. So just from this most recent stretch, like my conclusion is if you come to the game against the Thunder with the proper focus, you realize how young they are. You can absolutely zero in much better than any of these teams have done on Shea, which the Lakers should do. And that's the kind of the question I want to kick to Pete. But they are no juggernaut. All right. they're not. They have a great player who's going to make an all NBA team probably, or at least be in contention for the third team. And other than that, they got a bunch of young guys. J-Dub is great as a young rookie. Like a lot of teams are probably thinking, why do we pass on him? But they are small and they can absolutely be had. And you can get them to a point of a game where they realize that they don't have it if you bring the requisite energy. Mm-hmm.
No, I think that's spot on. And with respect to Shea and guarding him, I do think that it's a Vanderbilt night on that. And I think that in some ways Shea represents the highest hope for me of the perimeter guys that he can guard, because I don't expect him to be able to chase around a Steph Curry or a Damian Lillard or a John Morant Mitchell. The smaller guys, they're kind of cat quick type. Yep. But Shea uses a lot of craft, and I actually love the Kawhi comparison, right? He's Shea is one of the more fun players in the NBA, and he's, you know, averaging more than 30 a game, and he's a bad dude. That said, I think it's a similar situation to Ingram in that, like, part of what he's used to taking advantage of is that he's a 6'6 guard with size and craft and just has a good size advantage, right? And so we will see. I think he has more craft off of the dribble than B.I. does, for sure. And he's actually very crafty for his size. I don't want to act like he's not. But I do think that some of the advantage that he gets is just like he's 6'6", and a lot of times the guys that are guarding him are 6'3". And so I think Vanderbilt neutralizes that a bit. We'll see. But I love
just great patience there. And great patience with that skill set. Like, and because he's 6'6", so once he gets down into the paint, all he does, he just sort of pauses for one extra beat. And then he goes up. And so many guys don't have that like last level of being able to pause and either wait for the contact or wait for an angle to get the shot. But like that can be defended with discipline, you know, and just a lot of teams don't seem to have it. And you would hope that the Lakers would on this occasion, especially with AD in there helping Vanderbilt.
This is kind of what Austin does when he gets into the paint, and why he's so effective is that he was saying the other day, you know, I use my pivots and I'm going to use my shot fakes as well, and to use guys to get off balance. And so when you're 6'6" and you have a great understanding of how to get guys off balance and use their weight against them, and you know, you're going to get to the line, you're going to get those open looks in the paint. And so I wouldn't say Vanderbilt's the most disciplined defender, but I do think he takes away a lot of the size advantages there. And then with respect to AD, I think that we found something with the new wrinkle of setting the ram screen or you know, that down screen for him in the pin or in the dunker spot to get him the touch at the elbow rather than have him coming off the curl. We were still doing the having him in the corner coming off the curl in the last game, but I think that is a good new wrinkle that gets AD right in the middle of the floor against these guys that they just don't have anything for him. And it's really hard to double right in the middle of the floor like that. And so this is one of those practical things that I wish we had 10 more games to really flesh that out, but it is what it is. And like you said earlier, we are taking shape. It's just simpler shapes than it would be if we had more games.
Yeah. And so I don't want to lament that point too much, right? It's like that's the thing that can't be changed. And so of all the things that can be changed, though, if you have a list of 10 of those things or 5 of those things, well, let's hit 8 or 9 of those things hard as we can and hammer those in order to try to instill the style and the execution that we want to try to, right? And the coaching staff, who has been maligned for a variety of reasons, I'm encouraged by all of the little tweaks that we've seen over the last 2.5-3 weeks with this team. Like, you look at big stuff like the shift to Austin in the starting lineup, but all the little like overlap and staggering with rotations, finding a short part of the game each game now for Wenyan to play with AD, like just finding more and more solutions to things that the Lakers do control. They've been better at that. And I think it's been reflective in what the results are. And so I want to keep the focus on AD here, though, because to me, he is the key. He is the key to this specific game. OKC, like, they've been in LA a long time. And so who knows how that's going to impact them. But Mike, you know as well as anyone that while LA nightlife can be undefeated, once those lights dim on the crowd in the building formerly known as the Staples Center, and those players get on that stage and they see those gold unis or whatever throwback the Lakers are wearing that night, there is a sort of renewed focus that they have in order to try to stay in the game. And what can trump that a lot of times is some dude who's just kicking your butt, right? Like, and being like, well, tonight's not your night. And I've seen Anthony Davis do that so many times over the course of his career with the Lakers. I remember the game, Pete, where he told Jaren Jackson, basically it was like a game against Memphis, and he told Jaren Jackson, like, you're not messing with me tonight. Like, he gave him like 3 fouls in like the span of 8 minutes and then went on to like something like 20 something free throws because he was just dominant inside and you were not going to stop him. I saw glimpses of that, Mike, against the Suns in that third quarter where he just said, nope, I'm getting after it this game. And OKC's going to swarm him. They're going to do a bunch of different stuff, but they don't have the athletes anymore in the front court. And he can shoot over the top of big man Jalen Williams. And if he sees any minutes against Saric, he should destroy Saric, right? And so this is why, to me, this is much more of an AD game. And I'm hoping that everyone looked at the film from the third quarter against the Suns and is just like, this is the way in this specific game. Because I think they can get that win that you were talking about, Mike, by going through this dude on this night against this opponent under these circumstances.
Yeah, man. AD is obviously the one player that can impact this game the most, both in terms of monitoring that area that Shea likes to get in on defense, and then OKC just really not having a lot for him unless they want to be overly aggressive and trap and all that. And if he's not, you know, settling for that outside jumper and sort of playing a little bit of a lower energy, he should eat them up. He really should. And this is a game that the Lakers not only need to, but should win. They just should. They're better. They, despite how OKC is playing, we already went over sort of some of the reasons why they've been pulling together those wins. And I think that if given the full attention that they should, by the Lakers having a day off, by the Lakers coaching staff just getting to focus and lock in on that game OKC played against the Clippers last night, like, all of these factors, I think, play out. And then, you know, Pete, just for a quick look ahead, like, we're starting to get some reports now, Lillard, you know, downgraded to questionable with right calf tightness. You're seeing that. That's who OKC plays next, right? So you have to assume OKC is going to win that game. And then DeRozan has been ruled out of Friday's game, of tonight's game against Portland. How does that impact his availability for Sunday and potentially for Tuesday? But the Lakers, for now, like, get that out of the mind. I'm entering it more in the form of the Lakers still have to take OKC seriously as a team that maybe not everybody else has figured out that they're going to have to give proper attention to, but the Lakers should have by playing them twice within the last month and a half and by being right there, seeing OKC next to them in the standings. That there is no excuse for lacking that level of focus and urgency going into this game tonight.
Yeah, to me, that the that part of the season is done with, that part where you can float a little bit. And these, if we can't sustain the proper, you know, energy and focus level, which, again, like, we're talking about a team that's second in defensive rating since the All-Star break, right? And it's more speaking to the urgency of the circumstances that we talked about at the beginning than it is a criticism of the team, in that, like, this is a very unusual ask in the first place to be like, oh, figure out all your stuff in 20 yeah. games. Not all, like, we had something to build off and, of, but it's...
And I'm just... Oh, sorry, Pete. I'm meaning more in the context of against the opponent that you're playing that night. Not in, like every team should have, there's whatever, 9 games left. But right. you, like, the Lakers' focus relative to what OKC's is for everything on the line should be ramped up. Whereas, was that against Dallas in that game? Dallas was pretty locked in too that game, and Kyrie mm-hmm. certainly was. And that's not an excuse on behalf of the Lakers, but it's like recognizing what the balance is. And I do think this was my last thought on this. Like, I do think Austin in the starting lineup helps that. Helps that just directly in terms of not just a focus or a player that's going to play a certain way, but they can also keep you out of getting in a rut where the defense is loaded up a certain way, you know, and they're not going to give Beasley the three off the screen, and then AD is going to get pushed out. It's like you can operate on both sides of the floor with either Russell or Austin Reeves. And they started to go to that after a couple of plays against Phoenix, and it started to work right away. And so, yep. like, I like that. That's good.
No, likewise. And I think that he helps in a practical way, right? In that he was playing on the ball a ton, that Darius's point in the last pod about how both D'Lo and Austin are kind of 1.5s, this combo guard in between a point guard and a shooting guard type. I think they can really take advantage of that. And that's something that is unusual around the NBA to have that level of skill in two different spots. And I think it really helps out AD, right? And so there are two things happening at the same time on the AD front. D, that idea of him being more assertive and him just like looking to kick the ass of the guy in front of him, but also yeah. that putting him in the middle of the floor. This is part of, I'm really excited about this because it's really difficult to double there. And whether it's the elbow or right in the middle, it's really difficult to send a second defender. And so that's obviously the scouting report against AD. You see so many teams now, when we throw him the ball, when he's on the side of the court on either the left or right side, they're sending that second defender either right away, or they're sending it on his first move, but they're doubling him in ways that can turn down his overall level of aggression. It's much more difficult to do that in the middle of the floor. And so I think that we've kind of found something that, when we do need Anthony Davis to be the scorer, we can kind of dictate the terms to the defense rather than just hoping that his gravity creates open shots for other guys. So it's just another tool in our toolbox that I'm excited about.
No, so am I. And before we get out of here, I do want to say that it's just like, look, Friday's game is super important. That's the game that can get them to 500. And by all means, like, please, please, please get there.
Yeah, right? Like, a tiebreaker too.
There's like a mental hump to that as well. Like, each time the Lakers have gotten to within one game of 500, they've lost. And a couple of times ago, they lost consecutive games and they fell back to 3 games under. And that's exactly what you can't have at this time of the season. One of the things that I wanted to close with, though, is that idea of, yeah, like, on Monday, I want to be having a podcast, or Sunday night or whatever, I want to be having a podcast where we're talking about the Lakers are one game over, right? Like, they play the Bulls. I don't want to get too into the matchup with their game against Chicago, but this idea of small steps forward to get you to where you want to go. The Lakers are in that part of the season now mm-hmm. where it's just like, there are no more 2 steps forward, one steps back. You don't have to take as big a step forward as you might want to in, I don't know, man, December or early part of January or even just a month ago at this time, where the idea of building towards something matters. It's like, no, every step now needs to be forward, even if it's just a small one. And that starts tonight against OKC. It's super important that they continue to build on the habits that they showed the last game, particularly in the second half of that game, where a lot was unlocked on both sides of the floor. So I'm looking for that to continue against OKC, and I'm definitely looking for that to continue against a Chicago team that's going to have some energy when they come in. Pat Bev is going to make sure of that. Alex Caruso is going to make sure of that. They can be without DeRozan. But this is where I think, Mike, the Lakers are in the middle of that. And so I just want to see them continue to build.
Can I ask you guys one more question that I don't know if we have full time for, but I'm curious what you think. So with Vanderbilt sliding out and that, like, defending Booker, and in this case, we're saying I'd like to see him more on Shea. How do you see that affecting them lineup wise, just like inside and like with other bigs? Like, what? I didn't watch that closely last game because clearly whatever it was working. But how do you see that cascading effect if you're having him more on the perimeter in the lineups that LeBron's not out there?
No, so I just think it puts a greater emphasis on Troy Brown. That's a name we haven't said this pod, but Troy's the other forward. If Vanderbilt is going to be on Shea, Pete, like, Troy is going to be that guy that's going to have to take the other forward matchup, or he's going to have to take an important forward Giddy. Matchup. And it's either going to be Giddy or it's going to be Jalen Williams, right? Wing Jalen Williams. And that's like, Troy's going to go into some of those matchups as like, as a mismatch. Right. Like, I actually think that Austin is going to be on Giddy and
I see that.
And that D'Lo will be on Dort is kind of how I see it. And like, I've every game I said to you, like, this is what I think the matchups are. Like, I don't want to toot my own horn, but several times I'm
they're often close. Right. Yeah.
So like, that's how I sort of see it going is I see Vando on Shea, and I see Troy being very important in trying to slow down wing Jalen Williams, Pete.
I think it gives you an oppressive athlete on another level. And so when you've already got AD down there, that the guy around the rim, that you've got to change the angle of your shot and of your drive and just be very aware of, while you've got a 6'7", 6'8" dude breathing down your neck with a constant motor, it's just, it adds up. And so that's part of the reason why I love having him out there is it's just, it has a collective force to it that I think is helpful and just slots everybody more appropriately. So we will be back on Monday to, or perhaps even Sunday night, to discuss how this weekend went, some big games. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
Yes, Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebounded Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance.
Right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one,
miss it.
Bryant.
Unbelievable.
For the victory. It's over.
And
shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.